The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Welcome to it. The weekend is here. It's Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, 80s action star Colton Stone producing and engineering. It is Minnesota week. Gear up, get up, bundle up. Hope you're doing all right this morning. Can tap the line. Schilling Bridge Cork and Tap House, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Toll free for you. And on Twitter, at Mark Skurs, at Hail Varsity, or at Schmidt underscore Radio. Loaded up show for you this first hour. Our rewind segment will feature the Pride of Lincoln East, wideout Brian Reimers, or Ream Dog, as Coach Dub eloquently calls him. Had the fade route touchdown in the end zone to nod things up at 7 apiece last week. So we caught up with Brian Reimers in hour two. Brandon Vogel, 1 hour from now, from HailVarsity.com and magazine, and the Iron Horse, Gary Sharp. Sharpie is going to get his thoughts on the week that was. We'll share our thoughts with you. Kranak, are you ready for some football? It's been a draining week. I know you're back from the left coast, my friend. And I'm sure the buzz for Minnesota-Nebraska was just right below that Miami-Notre Dame matchup tonight, or that Georgia showdown with Auburn tonight, or that Wisconsin-Iowa heavyweight tilt this afternoon, or Michigan State-Ohio State that kicks off at 11 o'clock. Need a split-screen thing going later on today in your man cave. But it's nice to get to football today, isn't it? I mean, two teams a year ago that finished 9-4. Now you fast forward to this date in November that I kind of circled as we're talking back in August as maybe a slip-up game, right? As we thought Nebraska's season was going to be way different than it's become.
Yeah, before you knew it was going to be a slip-up season.
Right.
Yes.
So 4-5 teams trying to find their way to Detroit in the latter part of December for a bowl game. It's going to be good to get to football. Dear friend Ken Schimmick has tweeted out the weather conditions today, and my brother-in-law is up in Minnesota getting ready for Nebraska football, and as you're tailgating and pouring that first Bloody Mary or cup of coffee, 28 to 36 degrees, cloudy, chilly. And a kickoff going to be 36 degrees and cloudy. So basically, it's going to look like that beginning scene in some of those Eastern European horror flicks that are on Showtime about 2 a.m. It'll look cloudy, destitute, and dreary. But you have football. At least we can change this conversation from reasonable reasons to at least 3 hours of football to try and get back to 500.
This is the game. Remember before Nebraska joined the Big Ten, when everybody in the Big 12 looked down upon the Big Ten?
Right.
Remember that? Remember, we all hated the Big Ten.
Until that fraternity hazing beatdown you took, you said, no, these guys are for real.
Yeah. So remember that. This is almost a cliche Big Ten game. You know, it's two middle-of-the-road 50-50 teams that are just battling for bowl eligibility at 11 a.m. in crappy weather for none of the marbles. that's pretty much what we're about to look at today.
You have painted such an endorsement to watch.
Well, it's right? I mean, that's really what it is. This is one of those games that back then, when, you know, again, Nebraska's in the Big 12, Big 8, where you're just no chance in hell you're watching this one. It might be on in the background, you know, as you're doing other things, but you aren't going to watch. So that's where things are. And that's just dandy.
Uh-huh.
I'll tell you what, being away from it this week, just was in California for the week. And I mean, every morning was like opening up. It's like a soap opera.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just like, what? Oh, God, now the now the ex-boyfriend's coming back, and he's saying that's not how it was. Ex-boyfriend being banker.
Right.
You know?
No, and it's just, man, it's been an onslaught of drama. And a lot of the drama on field has caused drama off field. I mean, the trickle down, the domino, it's dominated 2017. And it started with a bad first half against Oregon, followed by an upset loss to a non-Power 5. And then, you know, your get-back games, measuring stick games, you just get drilled. There's really been no forward steps without three steps back. If you look at that game board in your mind, you're playing a board, you know, a board game with your kids, and you draw a good hand or whatever, Candyland, take seven steps forward, up, got to go eight steps back. That's what this season's been. And I don't know that a win in Minnesota is to be celebrated, but at least it isn't a step back. And that's kind of what it's become, managing expectations, because most have been decimated. And you just keep on. Here's what I don't think is the case. I don't think this team and this staff, despite everything going on, has checked out. Is their energy drained? Yeah. But are they still going to keep chopping wood? I think so. I hope so for them, because that's really all you have left is to kind of keep going out there and competing, despite the circumstances.
Yeah, and that's their only hope, right, is you just look at it on a really micro level of, okay, we have a chance to compete against a team playing the sport that we've been practicing for a while. Because none of the other things that fans are interested in, that players are interested in, that coaches are interested in, that make it feel meaningful, are there. They're just not there. It's the most lost season, and you hope in the grand scheme of things of Nebraska football, it is sort of the exclamation point at the end of the wandering years, right? Like that's it. It's the denouement. It's over after this, right? That the wandering years are over. Wandering years starting in 2002, basically. Because, you know what? So usually you watch these games with some sort of interest, even if Nebraska wasn't. So first you're like, okay, I guess in the pecking order of your brain, okay, how does this affect Nebraska for the college football playoff? Okay, well, that's completely out of the picture. All right, well, how does this affect Nebraska for the Big Ten race? That's not in the picture at all. How does this affect Nebraska for their bowl position? Truthfully, that's not really in the position or in the picture right now. Okay, well, how does this affect things for for developing more continuity and getting more experience in this offense? That's not even there anymore, because this offense is going to be gone.
Could be.
It's going to be a different offense next year. What do you mean could be? No one's entertaining the fact that this is going to continue, right? Like, just from hearing Bill Moose, are you entertaining that fact still?
You
entertaining the fact that this staff could return?
I don't think. I don't think it's in its entirety it will return. I don't know for sure where Bill Moose is at with his decision. I don't know where. I have a feel and a guess where he's leading to side with you that, yeah, it won't continue, but it's not absolute. The reason I say that is because the Paul Wolf example, okay? Homeboy was 2-10 when he got popped, or excuse me, 4-8, but he was coming off of a 2-10 season in year three. Now, it's apples and oranges to what you inherited, Washington State to Nebraska, so that's a big old check mark against the current regime if we're looking at coming in mid-season to a football program and a coach you didn't hire. No, you're probably right, but until that day comes, there still is an air of, the reason, too, is Bill Moose's own dude. He's going to look and do what he feels is best.
And if he's not going to make the offseason and his first few months that much more difficult on him.
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
Like, I don't believe his plan is to.
Yeah, retaining this staff.
No, I don't think
it's going to. It's just not.
It makes things worse, not better. I agree.
He will hate his job.
Sure.
Until September.
But I'm saying if Bill Moose, let's just pretend that there have been feelers put out there and he doesn't have an answer he wants, does he settle with something, anything that's different than now? Does that mean it's going to be better?
Mm. Well.
And you would think, well, yeah, it can't get much worse. I mean, if they don't win another game, they're 4-8.
Yeah.
So.
So to get back to today.
Thank you.
It's fine. It's just because I'm just not even entertaining the fact that these guys will be back. It's just sad as that is, whatever. I'm sort of over that, too. It's just kind of just sort of moved on. Right. So what is it that they're playing for besides that term pride? That's legitimately all that's left. The national picture isn't on the table. The conference picture isn't on the table. Hell, your pole position as a player, as it relates to your place in this offense or defense, don't even really matter. Because those are going to be different. And players know that. They get that. And so it's like, wow. And so if they don't fold and they put up a fight, that says something right there. That says that you got a little something in your team that you can hopefully build around. But that, I mean, man, that's really where it's at right now. And that's depressing. That game at Purdue, Chris. Oh, my God. I have never, and I mean never, seen an environment that crappy for a Nebraska game. It was, the tailgating was so subdued. There were no chants. There was no screaming of Go Big Red. If there was, the call wasn't answered.
Are you talking Purdue or Northwestern?
I'm sorry, Northwestern. I said Purdue.
No, you're fine. But, I mean, go there a little bit with me because I saw your tweets. I mean, it wasn't you. It was the fan base that didn't want to come sit in the Cranac section last Saturday where
we have 20 people up in that section.
You could spread out and put your feet up.
there are 20 seats up in that section. 20. 8 were filled. 8. There were 12 empties. And keep in mind, that's East Stadium expansion. That's generally speaking.
To be clear for our audience, 12 empties meaning seats.
Yeah, 12 empty seats.
Okay.
Yep.
12 empties could mean something else.
Well, I mean, I don't even know if that would have numbed the pain. and keep in mind, up in East Stadium expansion, it's micro. I get it. I'm not saying this is how it was everywhere, but if. That's generally speaking the fan that couldn't believe that they could get tickets and that there was no waiting list, right? It's pretty people that are pretty happy to be there. And people sell tickets, don't get me wrong, but they sell them because people buy them and other people occupy them. First game I've ever seen anything like that. I mean, it was crazy. Like that whole you got to fight apathy like the plague, which is what Bill Moose said.
Yep.
It is here. Make no mistake about it. It is here right now. You have an apathetic fan. Chris, how much have you studied up on Minnesota this week? Be honest. Compared to years past, and I'm not calling out you on saying that your prep is different.
When it comes to topic selection and what the buzz is, it's not been PJ Fleck, his bad offense, and their defense. It's been the week of Diaco.
You're not studying up on the opponent.
You study up enough to know right, who to watch for and how it can go sideways and how you can come out victorious. But that's not what people are focused on. It's not about it's not about the game anymore.
No.
It's about what happens after Iowa.
Period. That's all it's about, and everybody knows it. And if the Diaco situation, you know, we talked about this earlier in the season. There has been, now we don't know the root of it all, but just basic lines of communication have been pretty weird with this staff for a while now. Yeah, like you go back to Mark Banker when he was talking about the he makes the bloodbath comment. You know, you go back to whether or not a certain player is going to play or not play, and you got the defensive coaches saying one thing, and you got Riley saying another.
We got the whole Trey Bryant stuff with that. Is he going to ball? Is he not? What's up with his knee? He practiced. No, he couldn't go.
You know, you got Diaco didn't even know he was supposed to talk to the media. It's just the thing that's become clear. Now, his level of culpability is interesting because I don't know how much he just kind of let stuff happen or didn't have the force of personality to change it. But Riley is not in control. Right. Like he has not been in control of this program. He has not had a firm grip on the things that transpire in it.
No. Is that by choice or is that by, dear God, I'm saying it by mandate? I mean that's what we need to find out is was Eichhorst and is Billy Devaney, are they the ones that were running the football program? And Mike, you talk to the media, and Mike, here's your football guys, and Mike, you be the face of the program. I mean, who's driving the bus?
And Riley having his first big time job in a fishbowl.
Yeah.
His first one, maybe, you know, part of him could be like, oh, I guess this is how it is, right? I guess this is how it's done at the big boy programs. And maybe in hindsight, he's like, damn, I wish I would have told these dudes to back off. That whole Hawk tackling, I mean, come on. The whole thing. Now, the other thing that's going on, which is clear, is I believe Diaco has deluded himself into thinking that he can somehow keep a job. And he's doing whatever
he's
selling, can selfishly
bro.
To do that.
He's selling.
Yeah, he's doing whatever he can to do that, not realizing that that ship has sailed, clearly.
Well, he looks worse. He looks so just out of touch and full of BS, man. And I you talk to enough people, and we had folks on this week, specifically Alan Pinkett, who's covered Notre Dame, and the way he put it, Bob believes what he's saying. And when it comes to creating a really good defense, that will happen. He's just that good as a coordinator. Now, all that being said, the not begging, but pitch to whoever's listening has been emphatic, and it's been reinforced about you give it time, it'll work. That message. And it's now in self-preservation mode. That's what it's turned into for him.
Yeah. And he's not going to get time. And I think deep down he knows it. So he's operating in stress mode. And people act weird when they're in stress mode. To Riley's credit, the dude's holding it together mentally, it appears.
Well, that's the thing here is you look at Thursday, him coming out after practice.
He's cracking jokes about Hawk.
Right. I mean, if Nebraska fans had three wishes, one wish might be that this guy could win at a high level because you love him. He has handled this entire season with such straightforward communication to the media and the fans, and he's wore the shortcomings. He's owned up. But from a control standpoint and a hands-on approach between assistants and player decisions and people above him when he got here, that's been a mess.
And you have people going too many different directions.
And it's just too bad that the guy in front of a microphone or camera can look into it and look you in the eye and just be pretty straightforward with you, where you want to root for him, but when it comes to performance, it's just so sporadic and it falls short.
And subtly among the staff, you hear the offensive coordinator taking shots at the offensive line. You hear the defensive coordinator taking shots at the offense. You know, it's just not. It's over, man.
It's finger pointing is what it is.
It's not. Yeah, and it's sad. Mm-hmm. It's sad for that to occur. So then, when you watch a game, and bad things happen, like the
you don't wonder
just
why.
Disgusted.
You don't wonder why.
Yeah, you don't wonder why, and you're just sort of like, God, somebody put a fork in this thing.
Yeah.
It's just not working out, and it's not gonna, unless you really change something. And that's where we're at, and that's terrible, because you know what? You get 12 of these a year.
Yes.
You get 12 games, man. That's it. This is at least a good eighth of the reason why we all live here, right?
No, it is, and you wait for it all year. You get cranked up for spring ball. You talk about some of the summer workouts. It's shifted to recruiting 24/7. And then you get the games here and you want to see the product translate. Oh. And then for it to fall so flat and short and be so discombobulated, it is truly sad. And the other thing, too, here with this, man, is you look at Nebraska football and when's the last time you were just ready to tap out as a fan? You've had games maybe where you're just sick about Oklahoma, right? Or, damn it, you're tired of losing to Florida State and Miami in the bowl games. But that was playing for something pretty great. It's playing for a top five ranking, playing for a Big 8 or Big 12 championship. It was playing for a chance at a national champ. I mean, the stakes were so huge, the pain was so great because – man, you were just right there. You're almost ready to be called a champion. Mm-hmm. Now you're fighting for the Motor City Bowl.
I know.
And you're ready for it to be done. And the last time you felt that way, if you've ever felt that way, had to be back in 07. But that's not that long ago. And now this is a second dose. Look, of being, like you said, lost.
And people try to compare this. They say, well, they wanted to run Osborne out of town when he was, you know, when he lost seven straight bowls or whatever it is, late 80s, stretching into the early 90s. And you just said it. Look, they were losing to
the
national champions. That's who they were losing to in those bowls. Losing to Georgia Tech, national champion. Right, lost to Colorado during the regular season, national champion. Lost to Washington regular season, national champion. Lost to Miami, national title.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's who they were losing to. They weren't losing to Northwestern or Northern Illinois.
I'll do you one better. I see you're Northwestern and I raise you Northern Illinois.
Come on. Like, do not compare those two. And you feel for Riley because I think if he could do it knowing what he knows now, I think he would do a lot of things different when he got in.
Yeah.
I think he would do a lot of things different. I think he trusted some guys in the administration. I think he acquiesced some duties to some of those guys in administration. And those guys are either gone or going to be. And it's, but sometimes that's just how things go.
Well, and I gotta you know? Ask you this. And you do a lot of business. You do a lot of international business. And you've seen different parts of the world, okay? And your job with communication is to be able to connect to all different types of managers, right? Just get the company's message across so it's understood and executed. And that, to me, is the biggest flaw here since 2015. Mm-hmm. Was what type of management style did you bring in under the current, at that time, leadership, their style? Both those styles not meshing, the left hand not knowing the right hand, presumably, what's going on. And that is the biggest blown tire in this, is just not knowing what type of leadership you had, mm-hmm, and what type of leadership works. And the type of players, coach, program culture at Oregon State, where guys will come to Oregon State because they'll have some fun. And if you get 6, 7, 8 wins, that's a good season. If you lose and you're 3-9, no one's happy, but no one's going to get crucified for it. So the level of expectation was on a different planet. And guys will come play for Riley because he's a good dude. He's a smart offensive mind, and he'll get you to the league, perhaps, with the pro style. But he was a player's coach, and guys would just kind of go play, and he lets you kind of do your thing. Well, yeah, that can maybe work out west there, and it lasted a while out there. But when it comes to Nebraska and what you inherited and what you're recruiting, you just can't be hands off. Presumably, again, I'm not there every day or any day, but it just seemed for a long time that it was very hands off with the program. He treated guys like they were adults, whether or not they had earned the right to be treated like adults.
Which has its benefits, because you ultimately do want a player-led culture. That's working well for Wisconsin, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But when you don't have players with those adult traits, you got to step in yourself as coach or position coach to be the leader then. You got to be able to identify that.
Cultivate it. Cultivate it a little bit more than just hope it happens.
Right.
And I think Brandon Vogel has been all over this going on a couple years, where he just said, it just sort of looks like football. Just basic, like, and he wasn't saying that in a positive way. He's just saying, when you watch him, it just looks like football. It doesn't look like it's laddering up to anything different. It doesn't look like it's, you're establishing anything which will lead to this later. It's just sort of like, oh, there's two teams out there. They played a football game. Right? It's just sort of football. And it can't, it has to mean more than that here. It has to. And it just hasn't. They've just kind of played the sport against other teams. And that's kind of it. And then the game ends. And then, you know, you go play another team the next week. But what are you building?
Yeah.
You know?
What are you building? What are you establishing? Absolutely. Off and running on a weekend edition of Hail Varsity Radio. Can join us this morning, 466-377-6800, 825-5865. Can tap the line with Shillingbridge Cork and Tap House. Reminder about Wilderness Ridge. It's a bit nippy out to go swing the clubs. They do have indoor heated hitting bays. They have Mike Schuhart. Shuey is director of instruction, can help you get your game right. Maybe you're taking a trip during the winter months to a place that's a bit warm. Get the old tee box or approach shot kinks worked out with Shuey or Chris Thompson, director of golf. Can give Wilderness a ring for lessons. WildernessRidgeGolf.com. Can log on as well, 402-434-5106. And I want to remind you about gathering at Wilderness Ridge this holiday season to enjoy their spin on traditional Thanksgiving favorites. They want to see you there for the Thanksgiving brunch on Thursday, 11 to 3. Hey, that might be the trick this year. Instead of hosting, instead of going, gather your friends and family and go to Wilderness Ridge for their Thanksgiving brunch Thursday, November 23rd, 11 to 3. And it's appropriately titled Gobble Till You Wobble. I'm a big fan of their buffet. My pant size is evidence of that. Just Sundays, it's just a tremendous treat to eat and keep eating. But think about that. Think about Wilderness Ridge for Thanksgiving Day brunch from 11 to 3. You can log on wildernessridge.com and get your reservation today. A quick timeout. Mark Kranak, Chris Schmidt, action star Colton Stone. Our conversation next with wideout for Nebraska football, Ream Dog, Brian Reimers, his thoughts on the Northwestern game and the team as they move forward. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
With Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery, with Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranak.
2 minutes here, Hail Varsity Radio. Brian Reimers with his touchdown catch against Northwestern. Tell me what was called in the huddle, and of course, the execution went down the way you wanted.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I knew that play was going to be called sometime during the game, just didn't know when. And, you know, I was at Z. And me and Stanley were both in at the same time, which was how we practiced it all week. And I knew if I got that right coverage that I was the first target. And Teeley knew that too. And he threw a great back shoulder ball behind the defender, and I was able to go up and get it. And so going into it, I think, you know, I contributed a whole lot to the passing offense. And I think being able to do that on Saturday really helped my confidence level.
How's this season been for you? I know that there's been some injury. You've kind of fought your way back on the practice field. How have you dealt with the ups and downs personally from your physical standpoint?
You know, it's been tough because you always want to be out there every game day. And unfortunately this year, Rutgers and Ohio State wasn't able to be there. But being able to know that people are there to help you out and have your back, and your backups are going to do a great job is really assuring. And then being able to come back from the injury, practice that week at full speed is really key to be able to perform at the highest level on Saturday.
Who's had your back?
I think obviously Stanley has. You know, we kind of rotate in there, and then Rutgers game, Gabe Ron stepped in and made big plays when me and Stanley weren't playing. So I think he's been a good asset. And Connor Young, too. You know, he's done a great job when in that Ohio State game. He had that couple catches there that really helped the team.
What's Coach Dubb's message been through this season? It's also been kind of a noisy season.
Yeah, you know, he's always told us, keep playing. Never keep playing. Do your best every snap and take it play by play. Don't think of what's going to happen. Just play in the moment and snap by snap. Even in practice, we talk about that before every practice. Just snap by snap. Do your role and do what you're taught to do. And we've been taught, you know, as a receiver, you can make those impact plays that influence the outcome of the game. And when we have those opportunities in games, we need to take advantage of those. And I think that's really been his message this season and moving forward, and hasn't stopped.
What is it about Northwestern when they come to Memorial Stadium? It's been Hail Marys. It's been upsets. It's been now overtime.
Yeah, you never know what's going to happen with them. You know, they're a well-coached ball club, and, you know, we knew that was going to be a physical close game coming into it. It always is, you know, and, you know, we beat them at their place last year, so we knew that we were going to get their best, and we knew they were going to have a good game plan, and, you know, it just came down to some execution at the end of the game. You know, that overtime wasn't pretty, but it is what it is, and we can learn from the situations, and maybe, who knows, we'll maybe have another OT game this year where we can capitalize and win it.
Brian Reimers with us, Hail Varsity Radio. I'm trying to go back in my memory, have you been on the team when there's been overtime? Yeah, it was Wisconsin last year. Sorry. So with that, I mean, is there some more pressure that comes into it? How do you see the offense reacting when you go to free football?
I definitely, even on Saturday, I think kind of those overtime nerves kind of got to us a little bit. You know, each and every snap and everything you do matters to another level, and I think even kind of the line, everyone out the field and receivers even was just nervous about the whole situation. I think that comes with, you know, Northwestern's experience those overtime games. They've had about the past three games. Yeah. And so, you know, they're used to it. We haven't had an OT game this year, and you know, it just comes with that experience factor too, is another thing.
What have you seen from Tanner this year? Really struggled at times early in the year, bounced back from that. I really appreciate his character, and then kind of some ups and downs Saturday. How's his mood and demeanor? What have you noticed?
Yeah. The thing I've noticed about Tanner is he's a fantastic leader. No matter what happens on Saturday, he'll come in Monday ready to go, and he's always positive about it. Even after today, he'll come in this afternoon to meetings positive, ready to go after Minnesota and get ready for Minnesota. And so I give him a lot of credit for that, because that's not an easy thing to do coming off some of those games. But, yeah, I've been really impressed with his type of leadership that he's given our team.
A few minutes here, Brian Reimers with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Pride of Lincoln East, as he had a touchdown catch against Northwestern. Minnesota's next, and then you have three games to finish out this season. How are you approaching Minnesota and then the bigger picture?
Yeah, you know, you got one game each week, and I think you focus on that each week, and we know what we got to do to get where we want to be, and I think that'll give us the motivation going into the week. And, you know, we can win this week. You never know what'll happen after that. But I think right now everyone needs to focus at the game that's right in front of us.
What's been said by some of the leaders in that locker room? What was said by the peer group, by your teammates after Saturday?
I think Luke McNitt's done a great job of that. You can see him even after that game, high-fiving everybody, keep your head up. I think that's the type of senior leadership that we need. You know, not everything's going to go your way. And him and some of the other seniors have done a great job of that and really, really have helped us out.
What's the morale like? I mean, put a few wins together. You've had some stumbles as well. Is the energy really low, or is it still okay? Tell me how you see it.
I view it as it's still doing okay. You know, I think coaches have done a good job of telling us, you know, you never know what can happen in college football. If we win out, you never know what'll happen. And I think they give us that motivation during the week to practice hard to win that game that week. So I think they've done a good job.
How are you dealing with things as far as speculation, the swirl that's going on? You're a Lincoln kid. You have friends around campus, friends around the city that probably are in your ear.
Yeah, you know, they want to know all the little details that go on, but really we don't know a whole lot that's going on with the whole situation. And I think I just tell them, you know, you just got to live in the moment and not worry about what's going to happen in the future. We got 3 games left, maybe 4 to go. And then maybe once that's over, then worry about that, what's going to come next. And, you know, they have all their opinions of what's going to happen and all that stuff. And just kind of let it, kind of got to put it by you. Can't listen to that stuff.
I want to go back to the back shoulder. Take me through your guys' practice session, not only leading up through the week, but just the amount of times you've practiced the back shoulder. It's unstoppable in a guy like yourself that's 6'5". I mean, good luck, man. It's a little jump ball time. The amount of time you've practiced on it, and then just back to kind of the tempo we saw earlier, the 2-minute drill kind of look.
Yeah.
Is that something that when the time's right, you might see more of?
Yeah, I think we want to try to throw Northwestern off guard with that tempo and try to get some cheap, quick plays here and there in the beginning, speed them up because, you know, we aren't known for that. You know, they were expecting slow. But, and then back shoulder wise, you know, we practice it. It's not a huge focus, but, you know, Tanner knows how to throw a great back shoulder, like as you see on the game. And I think, and he just made that catch a lot easier than it probably could have been. And so, but yeah, we get those chances in practice too. I mean, it's not a huge amount, but we do practice that.
A thought here on the Big Ten and just what it is like week to week. And the narrative this week will be, well, Big Ten's probably out of the playoff, but you look at the situation that Penn State was in going to Columbus, and then they go to Sparty.
Yeah.
Not an easy back-to-back. Your guys is back-to-back, Wisconsin, Ohio State, and even you look at from a back-to-back standpoint, Ohio State plays Penn State, and then they go to Iowa. You guys have played in Iowa.
Yep.
It's not easy. So the grind that is the Big Ten, can you put that into words?
The Big Ten, as you saw this week, you never know. You never know what's going to happen. You know, Iowa this week, Michigan State this week. And you just got to come to play every week. That's the Big Ten is. No team's guaranteed to win, as we've seen. And so that's what's awesome about it. You know, there's some conferences where, like, oh, you know, they're the powerhouse of that conference. They're going to win. And I think that's what the fun part about it is. You know, you prepare harder than the team. You can beat them no matter what. And I think that's the fun thing about it.
Have you been happy with the preparation week to week from the guys?
Absolutely. I think from the coaches on down, it's been great. You know, they keep fighting, and then players buy into it, and I think that's huge. And Coach Riley always says, you know, preparation, that's going to win you the game. If you study the opponent and put more time into it than they do, you know, you're going to have the better outcome.
Last thought here, Brian Reimers with this Hail Varsity Radio. What would a bowl game mean?
It'd mean a lot. You know, this team's gone through a lot this season, through injuries, through tough losses. And I think being able to get there would just really boost the confidence for the team, even to go into next year, making that bowl game. And then winning that bowl game, too, it'll all carry over to next season. I think, especially for the seniors, you know, they deserve one. And I think that's what they want the most. And so by making it there, it'd mean a lot to the team.
Has the nickname been adjusted to be pronounced appropriately and accurately? Is it still Ream Dog, or has it become Rhyme Dog now?
still Ream Dog, you know. I don't think that'll ever change, you know. It's been stuck around for 3 years now. No point in going back.
Brian Rivers with us. Brian, take care, man. Thanks.
Yep, thank you.
Early to rise with Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Here's Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranick.
Quick hour, back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Brandon Vogel, 10 minutes away, Gary Sharp. Good stuff from Brian Reimers of Lincoln East. Interesting what he said about the overtime nerves. Really nice write-up this week on HailVarsity.com by Cody Nagel. When it comes to overtime under Mike Riley, you had 2015 at Miami. The interception, you had the three and out and a turnover on downs against Wisconsin last year. And you had four and good night against Northwestern.
That zero
yeah, that era of confidence seems to dissipate, and not all of those games have been kind of linear with momentum. Meaning you had Wisconsin and Miami where Nebraska came back to tie, and last Saturday Nebraska blew a lead and went into overtime with momentum wearing purple and silver. So, and I bring that up because today's, you know, Vegas says it's -2.5. Minnesota's favored. It could be an overtime game today. I mean, if things play to form, play to prediction, it's going to be a tight ball game. It could be overtime. Can Nebraska learn from Saturday if they are forced into free football today?
Maybe gain a yard in overtime. That'd be good.
How about you just kick it on first down? Go up 3-0.
You could do that.
Kidding.
You know what?
Does
this really matter though, Chris? Because I'm looking at the 2019 schedule, and so that'll be
Noah
Vedral's first year.
Are you doing this
year.
To me?
That'll be Noah Vedral's first year at quarterback.
Okay.
Under Scott Frost, because he'll transfer from UCF and have to sit out 2018. And, you know, it's a pretty manageable road schedule. I don't mind that being the first year for Noah.
Okay.
You know, Colorado will be tough. But outside of that, you're at Illinois, at Minnesota, at Purdue, and at Maryland. I think that he can handle that.
Okay. Well, it's all better now. Mark Kranick, Chris Schmidt.
2019, Noah Vedral.
Colton Stone, 80s action star producing. A quick timeout. Brandon Vogel on the week that's been of Hail Varsity next. Gary Sharp on the way. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranick.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Back with you, Hour 2, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranick, Colton Stone, and you. Gary Sharp coming up in 25 minutes. Thoughts on Nebraska, Minnesota, the week, the ACCA week, can be put to bed as Nebraska will kick off at 11 o'clock, about 35 and cloudy. In Minneapolis, we welcome in Brandon Vogel of HailVarsity.com and magazine at Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter. Vogues, good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Good. You fired up? I mean, this is a game you had circled. As
this is why you write all those articles.
As a maybe a slip-up game, as Kranick well put in hour one, kind of a slip-up season for Nebraska. But kind of an interesting gray area both teams are at right now at 4-5, both coming off 9-4 seasons. That dynamic coming in. I want to start with this. And a lot's been talked about when you get into transition, and Minnesota is in that. And now they're almost through it with this first season, but they go from the Jerry Kill, Tracy Clay's style of, I'm going to call it, you know, Kansas ethics, okay? I mean, you know, hard-nosed Kansas dudes that created the program, worked their way up to a Power 5 school, and now you have P.J. Fleck, who's young, he's energetic, he's 38, and that dynamic of guys that were kind of Kill and Dilly Bar type fits, and now you have this personality of Fleck coming in. And you know what? Minnesota has had a step back this season. I don't know what type of talent was left, but it is interesting to see this dynamic with Fleck and how the buy-in has gone. Is that something you're going to be watching on the other side of the sideline? We wondered about Nebraska's energy level and commitment level, and are they still going to keep fighting? I think that's a fair question, don't you, for Minnesota at this point in the year?
Yeah, I do, and I think it's probably the most interesting thing about Minnesota from an outsider's perspective over the next year or two. I mean, Fleck has such a big personality and sort of a bombastic kind of approach to culture that I think it's inevitable that you're going to – those transition years there, you're going to have some guys who are like, this dude's crazy, and there's going to be some other guys who are all in on it. So as you kind of filter those out and you're able to recruit to it a little bit more, I mean, I think it'll go a little easier. I don't remember what his first record was at Western Michigan.
1-12.
That's what I thought. So, but by year three, you've kind of recruited to it. You've got guys buying into it. So I think this year for Minnesota has probably gone about like I expected it to. They probably don't have the quarterback they need. You know, downfield passing will not sort of the bones of this offense is really important, I think, to what Fleck wants to do. And they've kind of struggled in that regard.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Brandon, looking ahead to 2019, Noah Vedral's first road game as quarterback in Nebraska will be against Colorado. What's the key?
You think Vedral's going to beat out Max Dugan? Interesting. Okay.
Hey, let's not count out Jebbia. I think he translates pretty well to Scott Frost's offense, actually.
We'll
be as
I'm going to go get a beer. You guys enjoy.
Who is the 2019 opener, by the way?
The opener is South Alabama, but then it's at Colorado the very next week.
And South Alabama should be a pretty soft open then. You'd be able to put up some big numbers there.
Yeah, but look who comes up after Colorado. Northern Illinois. Who'd have thought that'd have been a measuring stick game?
I did notice that Central Florida, I think, is scheduled to host Stanford in 2019. So you think Scott Frost wants to leave and not be able to play that game? I don't know.
Interesting. It's interesting. Man, Brandon, Bob Diaco, I don't know. It's hard to even know where to go with it. I guess I take it as this is a guy who I think early on sort of deluded himself into saying, all right, I don't want to lose my job. I don't want to move my family again. I'm going to start lobbying to keep keep a gig around here. He's got to know that gig is up by now. What do you make of that whole debacle of the last week?
Well, it's been kind of tough to figure because I think there's probably some truth to what he's saying.
You're right. I agree with that. I think to paint Bob Diaco as like, I don't know, completely unhinged is unfair because I think you're right, but delivery matters.
Yes, I think that was my ultimate takeaway. Like, maybe this is the truth, or at least a portion of the truth, but the truth doesn't help you here. Like, nobody wants to hear it. You know, so you're just safer kind of punting on that whole conversation and saying, hey, we haven't been good enough. We're trying to get better. And I see us getting better, or something along those lines, which he has said a lot. But it's tough. I came into the season a big believer in what Diaco tries to do defensively. But I do sort of wonder now, and I still think it would work. I think it takes time, but anytime you're putting a focus on eliminating big plays, which is the one thing kind of this defense has done to a degree of any note on the national level, you're going to be in the ball game. But it seems as football continues to change, you have to be after some of those negative plays. That's kind of the alternate piece to that you see a lot of coaches going to. And Diaco's defenses have never done that. They're not high sack. They're not high tackle for loss. They're very low turnover. So you wonder if that approach is going to continue to hold up as football evolves. That's kind of my big overarching question. If he were to be here 3 or 4 years, doesn't look like that's going to be the case, because the timeline for this defense to get better just didn't match up with the timeline for Mike Riley's program to get better.
Vogues, if you were to guess how the pitch went to get him here, I mean, what do you think he was sold?
Probably a lot of autonomy, and it certainly seems like that has transpired. It seems like Nebraska's defense is kind of, I don't know if off there on their own is totally accurate, but at least to a degree. Like, Diaco has his plan. This tackling thing, which Mike Riley says didn't go down the way Diaco said, but we know Nebraska spent some money to bring some people in. Not insignificant amount of money, even though considering how much money football generates, and for a guy to come in and say, well, that's not going to work. I can see the players straining against it. Their spirit is broken with this tackling system, which all seems a bit much, but who knows. Tells you that he had a lot of control over how this was going to go. I mean, he was the guy. He brought him in. He was a nationally notable guy, former Broyles Award winner, come in and fix the defense. And it wasn't a job, it looks like, that can be done in a year, particularly when you stack injuries on top of that. But unfortunately, we don't know if he's going to have any other years additional to that to kind of make his case. So it may just go down as one of the stranger periods, I think, in Nebraska history.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Bob Diaco's philosophy kind of brings up another, maybe more macro discussion about football that I'm curious what you think. And it's something I've always had a problem with. Discussions about situational football, yeah. You know, of just like, oh, we got to do better on third down, or our offense needs to be better on third down, or red zone offense needs to be better. Because it's so like, because to me, if you're just fundamentally a good football team, you will have good results in those situations. And I don't understand how you can just sort of work on that. Like, okay, now it's third down. Now we're really going to play ball. You know what I mean? And I've thought about that in relation to Bob Diaco and his approach of, well, you know, we're going to be built for, you know, once they get in our red zone, good luck. You know, we'll give them yards, but we're not going to give them points. I don't know. I'm just curious on where, because you like to dive into the numbers and dive into things like that. Just where do you come down on kind of that emphasis on things that seem to be more circumstance than they do, I don't know, just playing the sport?
Yeah, from a numbers point of view, they certainly are. I think it's not so much a schematic thing. You can't say, well, we're going to be good on third down defense, and here's why. I'm going to show you the play that's going to make us good on third down defense. I think those things do become sort of cultural keystones in your defense if you're going to try to play that. And just the way we said, well, PJ Flex culture is going to take a while to set a little bit here. I think Diaco's would too. So it kind of goes back, and it's tough because you get into the flowery stuff that Diaco talks about a lot. But one of the things I like about him is he seems to be about something. Like, he seems to have these ideas at least. But you talk about sort of the mentality of being a defender. You know, it just has to kind of become a culture of, okay, well, maybe we screwed up a couple times first and second down, but if we end up in a third down, here's a chance. And if you kind of believe that, well, this is when we're good, this is when we get off the field, maybe over a course of multiple games, you can sort of build something there. And I think same with red zone defense. That one's tough. It's a bad measure. When teams get in the red zone, they should score. It's just a matter of, can you keep them to field goals instead of touchdowns? But I do think parts of that are more sort of cultural than they are structural, if that makes sense.
You know, and man, you just said it. And I think you've been saying this for a couple of years, and you really have to dive into it to explain it, but you know, you've said kind of from the beginning with Riley that it just sort of looks like football. Yeah. And inferred in that is there doesn't seem to be much identity, there doesn't seem to be much conviction. And as you just mentioned with Diaco, he's at least about something, has some conviction. At the end of the day, is that out of all factors, kind of maybe the main reason why this Riley experiment is not working?
For me, certainly. And, you know, it's easy to dismiss some of this stuff as just talk, but if the players and the coaches and sort of everyone involved with the program believes it, well, then you sort of get to the powerful aspects of it. So, you know, I guess as opposed to Pelini, which I didn't really see a strong top-down vision there either, you don't hear a lot of the same things from Mike Riley. You know, there's not the it's all part of the process sort of part to him. But, you know, when he says things like, well, we've got to identify some identity runs and be able to execute those and things like that, you never get a sense of, well, yes, that's the problem, but where's the solution coming? Like, why are you going to develop those? How is it going to happen? And if you just focus, well, we got to coach them up, et cetera. I mean, I think you have to have answers to those questions for, okay, here's why this is going to get better, because we've done this, this, and this, and we've made it a part of who we are. I think you see those sorts of things with most programs. People can dismiss Saban's the process as a thing that's not really tangible, but you see it in the results. It's certainly tangible on the field of play over the last decade. So things like that matter a lot to me.
When you get into talking process and culture, it begins with a mindset, doesn't it? When you look at some of those programs that you want Nebraska to become, and I'm going to throw two of your neighbors in, and that's Iowa and Wisconsin. When it comes to identity, and you can yawn at it, but the results are effective. They've won big games. They've led SportsCenter. They've created buzz because of what they've done on the field. I mean, does that process and that culture formation start with a clear mindset on what type of traits your football team has to have physically?
Well, I don't know necessarily that. I mean, I think that part of it can be adaptable, but okay. You know, in writing on the message board earlier this week, I kind of put it like this. And you hear players from the 90s and before that talk about how ruthless practices were and how Saturdays kind of felt like, you know, a day off. But I think that that's telling you something important, because it's indicating, well, A, the competition level to get on the field was very high, but also that approach was instilled in them some way where what you're doing Monday and Tuesday in practice and throughout the week is more important than what happens on Saturday. Like, the games almost become, well, it's the weekend, let's kick up and have some fun, because you've put in the work to that point. You know, lately in Nebraska, everything builds to the game. You fret about the game. You say, well, here's how Nebraska could win it. Here's how they could lose it. This is what they have to do well. And all of those sort of matchup and tendency things come out. But I just don't get the sense. I mean, look at how many guys, and injuries are injuries, but guys are just held out for precautionary measures, things like that. Well, how hard and how important can that Monday practice really be? Now, I'm not saying guys need to play hurt or even dinged up, but you just get the sense where it's so easy to hold guys out that it's hard to say that Monday is more important to what we're going to do this week than Saturday is. And I think that's the exact opposite approach of what you want to see.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, Brandon, here it is year three, and we've, you know, talked about just maybe that lack of conviction within the program about something. And Diaco at least has that going for him. So to this point, come hell or high water, what is Nebraska about? And can you even answer that question?
No, I can't, because yeah. there's sort of no touchstones there for me to grab onto and say, well, I think it's about this. I mean, and it's easy to fall into style discussions here, but like, it even goes to sort of the offense. Like, we're going to be multiple. We're going to do all these, be able to do all these things and really challenge defenses based on what they're showing us. Well, that can work. We've seen it work some places. But in terms of, to go back to kind of something Chris asked about, you know, it's a lot easier to establish an identity if you're just inwardly and process focused and said, this is what we're about. This is how we're going to teach it and what we want to do. And we'll sort of adjust from there rather than starting from a point where you're kind of ready to adjust to anything. There's a big difference there in terms of being passive and being aggressive, I guess.
Vogues, what's coming up on Hail Varsity today and into next week?
Well, hopefully we'll get back to talking about some games eventually, although it doesn't seem like those are primary questions on people's minds. So working on a couple of, you know, big picture things like some of these discussions that we've had. But we'll see how things go today. We're getting ready to put a magazine out here on Sunday, so that'll be in mailboxes this week. Interview with Bill Moose in there. Jacob Padilla's got a great Big Ten basketball preview. So for people who are turning to the hard court at this point, there's plenty in there.
At Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter. Can read him, HailVarsity.com, every morning with hot reads. And, of course, can subscribe to the magazine, 10 issues under $30, 855-3-HUSKER, HailVarsity.com/subscribe. And get in on the message board. Great discussions with Nebraska fans all over the world on topics on and off the field. So think about it and check us out on HailVarsity.com. Folks, have yourself a great weekend. Thanks for the time today. Great chatting.
Thanks,
guys. Take care.
Thanks, Brandon.
Brandon L. Vogel. Get a workout in today or soon and get that weight loss goal achieved, or get that, how about a little more muscle, a little more buff? And you can do so with Madonna Proactive. 56th and Pine Lake is where Madonna Proactive is located. And health is so important. Fitness and wellness goals can and will be achieved with the Madonna Proactive. I told you, 56th and Pine Lake, the location. They have individualized personal training, beginner and advanced classes, along with a great variety of fitness equipment. And if you like to swim, like me, three pools, including Lincoln's only AquaTrack. Whether you're new to fitness or you want to try and get back in to shape, Madonna Proactive, there for you. Schedule an appointment. Take the tour. You will be wowed. It'll help get you the results you want. 402-420-0000. Get that tour set up. You sign up with Madonna Proactive, and with an annual commitment, you'll pay nothing till January. The quicker you sign up, the more you save. That's 3 months and change of free workout time for you. It's a great special. And you also get a consultation with a personal trainer, registered dietitian, and wellness coach. That's $175 value, free to new members. Can log on MadonnaProactive.org. 56th and Pine Lake, an amazing facility. Great people there to help you achieve your fitness goals. Schedule your tour today, 402-420-0000, with our friends at Madonna Proactive. A quick timeout. The Iron Horse, Gary Sharp, up next on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Now it's time to get back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show with Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranak.
All right, that's it!
You two guys leave me no choice. No television for a week. What?
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Top of the morning to you. It's Minnesota weekend. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, 80s action star Colton Stone. Welcome in the Iron Horse. He is Gary Sharp. Sharpie, good morning, sir. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. Can you feel the Minnesota buzz?
I'm feeling Minnesota. Woo! I am feeling Minnesota. Did you ever see that movie?
I did not. I think I'm a little bit busier than your schedule.
This is like the cliche Big Ten game, isn't it?
Well, yes. But at 11 a.m. between two teams that, you know, are kind of muddling through the season. This has been a grind. You wake up and you go, my gosh, with everything going on, and there's probably more attention paid towards the day after the final game than there is during the course of the season. You think, geez, we got three games. And then once you get to like 10:59 this morning, you're dialed back in that Nebraska is playing a football game. And I've said this for a weeks now. Fortunately, through all of this, and when you think it can't get even more sideways, you get this week with Bob Diaco and Tackling Gate. Mike Riley is the perfect person to handle all this, because he is pretty optimistic. He doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low. And I think most of the coaches in America in this current situation, they would have been done by now, and it would have gotten really, really ugly. So I think we have that going for us. But it'll be, people will get dialed back in, but man, it has turned into a grind to cover this football team.
Grind is the operative word there, and I want your opinion, Sharpie, here. What relationship and the dynamic between Diaco and Riley, how do you think that relationship is?
Well, I don't think after this week it's great. It's been an interesting marriage. I think Mike has turned a lot over to Bob on the defensive side of the football with the trust and saying, go do what you got to do. And I truly believe that if, when Bob Diaco was hired, he was probably told, hey, you've got about 3 years. By year number three, you'll have this defense in. We'll have players here. That'll be year number five of Mike Riley. Things will be really, really good. And so he started the process back in the spring of implementing the defense, ramping it up, knowing that there would be mistakes, and sticking with the process over immediate satisfaction. And all of a sudden, 56 days ago, that completely changed, where it became, instead of looking at a five-year plan, it became week to week. And I think he's had a hard time adjusting it. But I do believe that if they continue to stick with this defense and some guys make progress and guys get healthy, that you will see better results going into next year and down the road. I mean, I think there's two big keys on the defense. These are not excuses, guys, because in the moment, guys still got to tackle better, they got to be fundamentally sound, and they got to line up correctly. But no JoJo Doman hurt, and also Bob Elliott passing away. You don't want to bring that up because it's someone that has lost his life against a battle of cancer. But Bob Elliott was brought in specifically for Bob Diaco to help him implement the defense, but also to kind of be his foil when he was coming up with ideas or trying to bounce things off of. And Bob Diaco all of a sudden didn't have that guy that you hired as his safety blanket. So I think it's a culmination all season on both sides of the football of things, injuries, miscues, not living up to expectations that could go wrong. And that's why we're in this position where Nebraska's 4-5 and has to win two of the last three just to become bowl eligible, which would be the second time in 3 years where you're scrambling at the end of the year to get into a bowl game, which is unacceptable.
You know, and it just speaks to, it's just one leg of what seems to be just a lot of dysfunction within the athletic department that has taken on a lot of different forms. And it does, and when I say dysfunction, it doesn't necessarily mean evil and infighting, but I think it alludes to just no common denominator, no common vision. You have a lot of kind of individual silos, people trying to do their best with the role that they've been given. And, you know, I-Corps gave a lot of people a lot of roles. And I think you have Riley, you know, sitting there trying to muddle through all of it, trying to parse through all of it. And he's not necessarily the personality type to do that. I think it just all adds up to, it's just not working out, right? And you sort of need to clean house and start over from top to bottom, don't you?
Well, I think there's a lot of people that have tried to make this their program, that have tried to add their two cents. And still, instead of everybody having a common vision, from the athletic director all the way through the football coach, all the way through strength and conditioning, all the way through equipment staff, training staff, I think that has been missing, not just this year, it's been missing for a while. And it starts at the top when you're in it for the program, you're not in it for yourself. And I think that's what happened as of late, is you're making hires specifically for yourself, not what is needed. And we've gotten into this situation where there are mixed messages and people have different visions, and there's way too many cooks that are cooking up their own little meals on the sides. It is. It's embarrassing. Guys, this was an embarrassing week for Nebraska, because nationally people pick it up and run with it, and Nebraska continues to be the laughingstock. And it's not what they do on the field. It's stuff that is off the field with things that are said, whether it be wishy-washy on Black Friday or this week having a debate. We had defensive coordinator on ex-defensive coordinator crime. I mean, come on. This is Nebraska. But maybe this is the new Nebraska. But I will tell you this. If this is the new Nebraska, it's going to be fixed quick, because I think this program needs a full cleansing with someone to come in here that has a clear vision that does not waver. And also the buck stops with them. You're not telling them who to hire or what to implement into their program. They are the head coach. You hired them for a reason. Let them do their job and let them build the culture and share the vision all the way down to the bottom of the program.
Gary Sharps with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Sharpie, I know you are locked in, and know folks around the country in college football, specifically Florida. I want to go there for a second and kind of get your take here. What do you believe with the Florida coaching job when it comes to who they've identified, who they want, kind of their draft list, so to speak?
Well, I do know that Bob Stoops was one of the first people they reached out to, and he indicated that he would prefer to be retired. They have to get an offense, and so they have looked at offensive-minded head coaches, Scott Frost, Chip Kelly. At this point, none of us know anything. Both athletic directors at Florida and I mean, all over the country that are making coaching changes, they're pretty tight-lipped. So anybody that says they know anything, they don't know anything. They're speculating, or they're just making up that they have sources. I think Florida has penciled in or has dialed in that Scott Frost is a guy. Now, there is the hesitancy, I'm sure, in the Florida faithful that there's Jim McElwain part two. Not personality, but just the roadmap to get to a Florida job. But keep in mind, and it's become, we've talked about this, I think, every Saturday since the Northern Illinois game when Scott Frost's name popped up and wouldn't go away, is Urban Meyer, before he came to his dream job, remember, he stopped off at Florida and eventually ended up at his dream job, and that's worked out pretty well for him. I don't know if Scott Frost will follow that same path. I know that Scott Frost is pretty dialed in on his football team right now, and all this stuff happens behind the scenes. You reach out to your agents. Who knows what's going to happen? The only thing I know what is going to happen, probably for sure at Nebraska, is the morning after the Iowa game, there'll be some clarification on where the football program is going, and then you take the next step on returning Nebraska to where they are competitive and where you get to the middle of November and people are still talking about them on game day, that Nebraska's playing for a division championship.
Gary Sharp with us, Hail Varsity Radio, as we get set for Nebraska and Minnesota, kind of. handicap it for us, though, because you do hear talk, of course. Everybody's got different sources, different people with different levels of, you know, connection to the university. In your mind, outside of Scott Frost, who do you view as legitimate candidates if for some reason Frost decides to stay with UCF or go to Florida or something like that? Who else in your mind is in that running?
Well, I think Chip Kelly's name is very popular. Nebraska needs a wow hire, not a whoa. He would fit that. You know, Bill Moose is very familiar with him. I could see a guy like Kevin Sumlin, maybe with a fresh start somewhere else, who comes as a name. Whoever Nebraska hires, you hire Scott Frost, everybody in the state knows him. Everybody knows him around the country now. You need a guy that is a name, but you also need a guy that around the conference, for the first time in a long time, people go, uh-oh, look who they hired. Scott Frost, Chip Kelly, Kevin Sumlin are names that are out there. But I have a feeling, guys, with Bill Moose, and you know, there's been a lot of comments by people in power positions of Scott Frost. Maybe you just chalk it up to, hey, he's an alum and we just want to see him do well, or there's no such thing as tampering in college athletics anymore. There's part of me that thinks that Bill Moose has somebody in mind that none of us are talking about. That he's played it very coy, that there is somebody that he knows intimately and now is starting to figure out how you compete in the Big Ten West, how you compete in the Big Ten, what you have to do in recruiting, and he's had that guy in mind and no one is talking about it. That would not surprise me, considering how Bill Moose has acted in his previous searches. I mean, did anybody in Pullman see Mike Leach or Ernie Kent coming?
Mm-mm. No. And that's very, very possible when you look towards if a change is made, whatever Moose decides, that, yeah, I mean, Sharpie, he'll do his own vetting and hire. He'll make the call what he thinks is best, and it could be a name out of nowhere, and if it meets his criteria, that's what he's going to circle and go with.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, I think whoever is the football coach in Nebraska in 2018, there has to be almost a kumbaya of people coming together so that this football program can move forward, that it's not toxic, that people let it breathe, and whoever the new person is gets to just coach football to get Nebraska back to where they want, and the outside noise simmers down a little bit. Now, I know that's a pie-in-the-sky idea because there's so much attention towards that football program, but things have to change. You look back 10 years ago. Did we learn anything from 10 years ago? Probably not. Mm-hmm. We're back into the same thing again, and it feels very similar to 2007 in some ways. Nebraska has to learn from their failure and grow, whether it be as a football team on the field or in the way things are handled from people in power chairs to people in headsets. That's got to be the biggest thing to be cleaned up. Because you look around the country today, teams that are playing well, teams that are being mentioned for playoffs, they not only have extreme talent on the field and very good coaching, they also have some cohesion between the power chair and the head football coach. I think of Notre Dame and Michigan State, where they last year were combined 7-17. This year they're 15-2 combined, and they're feeling pretty good about themselves playing today with a chance to really ramp up their season. They not only had strong coaches, but they had athletic directors that had a vision and a belief and a relationship with that football coach that told you, we're going to stay the course, and I got a feeling we're going to come out of the back end. We flip the calendar to 2018. That has to happen.
Sharpie, you mentioned Notre Dame and Michigan State, and they had really, really horrible steps backward a season ago compared to where they'd been, be it 10 wins or playing for a title or in the college football playoff. You had athletic directors that had belief and vision, like you talk about, that saw, okay, that wasn't good, but it was more the exception than the rule when you look at the track record of Kelly and D'Antonio. And from a panic standpoint, you have expectations at Notre Dame. Michigan State's kind of risen up to have, I don't know their fan base, obviously, but I think they feel pretty cool about being a 10-win team every year, and then you fall back to 3-9, and you get that panic that says, oh, my God, was this just a sweet dream we had? but they've rebounded here. And touch on, you mentioned the ability to breathe. Touch on the fan base for a moment at Blue Bloods, specifically Nebraska, when you have a down year, because that happens in college football. Bama's the only team that hasn't had a down year. I mean, Florida State has stepped back. SC has stepped back. Oregon's way different. Auburn's up and down. It's a cycle, and you're going to build up to maybe an 11 or 12 win season, but you're not that far away from dropping off to an 8 or 9 win, or maybe even a 7 win season.
Well, I think the biggest thing is, and I look at this football team, if I had to go in front of my boss and tell him why I think I should have, why I've earned another year, we all have failure. And I think Nebraska fans now, I think Nebraska fans nationally get a bad rap. Not everybody that follows Nebraska football thinks that every year you should win a national championship. The expectations are extremely high, and we expect success, but we're painted in a different light nationally. That's okay. We know who we are. Now, there's still the lunatic fringe of fans that are that way. Every fan base has that. But I think with Nebraska, on the football field and with the struggles they've had, can you honestly say, guys, that Nebraska has learned from their failure and they've grown from their failure? I love what P.J. Fleck said this week. He counted this year as year zero. But he said, we will only know if we're better if we learn from a bludgeoning that we get in Ann Arbor. If a couple of years later we've learned from that and we've grown, whether it be as football players in our strength and conditioning or as coaches, we will then prosper. I don't know if I go back even 2 years ago to some of those bad losses or even earlier in the year, Nebraska doesn't seem to learn to grow from failure. Iowa State grew from failure. Look what's happening there. There's other programs. Last year, Notre Dame had failure. They only had one loss where it wasn't a one-score loss. They grew from that failure. That's what seems to ail Nebraska when they do struggle, is you don't see them learning from it. Because if we could see that Nebraska was failing, I can put up with a team losing. It's tough to win. But if you are learning from that and it's not a repeated thing, I'm okay with that, because that lets me know that as a coaching staff and as players, you realize your mistake, you're correcting it, and you're getting better, and eventually that's going to pay off. That's a very frustrating thing for me, because we haven't seen it for 3 years, guys.
Yeah, it's very much a station to station kind of approach. You know, get through 1 week, go to the next week. Same with, that goes right down to offensive play calling even. Right? It's just sort of like, we'll try this play. End of the day, and we make a lot of talks about style and how that's important. Guilty, I believe you need to have a strong run game. But at the end of the day, talk to Brandon about this last segment too. It's really about just, you need someone in here that has conviction, right? One way or the other. Like, come hell or high water, we are going to be about
and then fill in that blank. Right?
Yep.
That, of all things, that seems to be the thing that's been missing really since Frank left.
Well, I'm absolutely there with you, Mark. I think you hired as the head football coach. You are the buck stops here person. Maybe you like to delegate and you hire assistants and you let them do their job. But at the end of the day, it's on your tab if things fail. And the buck stops with you, and somebody that needs to create an extreme confidence in their plan with their players and staff first, and then on to the fans. And you're absolutely right. That has eluded Nebraska for a while now, but I think it's a two-pronged thing. You have to have the athletic director and the football coach in sync with each other. And you also have to have an athletic director that, when things don't go so well in football, doesn't panic and all of a sudden gets out of their comfortable stage. And I think we've seen that over the last couple of athletic directors. When things don't go well with football, you have most recently what happened with Sean Eichhorst. Sean Eichhorst all of a sudden started to do things publicly that he hadn't done so far at Nebraska. And next thing you know, we're in this current situation, waiting for 2 weeks from this Saturday to figure out what happens with the football program.
Sharpie, before you go, give me a lock of the weekend. Give me a game you're interested in.
Well, if you would ask me yesterday, because I had Stanford in 6.5. Today, lock of the day, I would like to go with a big game. I will say the lock of the day is that Wisconsin will rout Iowa.
Okay. Wow.
They will cover that spread.
Okay. So 12.5.
That's 12.5.
Yeah. Sharpie says get them Badgers.
Yes. And you know what? Here's the thing. With all what if people are looking for things to enjoy today watching the Nebraska game, and I'm going to enjoy, I'm resigned to 2 weeks from today, something's going to happen with Nebraska football, and we can all move on and start over again or start the process, whatever it could be. But I'm going to enjoy watching guys that I can tell with my own eyes are out there and they're giving it their all for Nebraska, that this is it for them. Like the guys like Chris Weber and some of the other seniors that, you know, every play, it might be their last play. So enjoy watching them play today. But I'm telling you, if Nebraska today, I'm done with the last two games. If Nebraska today can't run for more than 125 yards, shut the program down. Tell Penn State and Iowa it's not worth playing. Because I will tell you, if you can't run for 125 yards or more on Minnesota, Scott Frost ain't going to fix things, what's going on right now. I kid. But keynote, when Nebraska runs for 125 or more this year, they're 3-0. When Minnesota holds teams under 125 yards, they're 4-0. When they allow more than 125, they're 0-5. There you go. There's your number for the day. But let's don't kid ourselves. If you can't go to Minnesota and run the ball for 125-plus, I don't know what we're doing. Mm.
Sharpie.
125.
Hang on. Take care, man. Thanks for the number and 125 and beyond. I like it. Sharp, take care.
Such a low standard.
No, it's honesty. It's honesty, and there you go.
I haven't scored a rushing touchdown in four games. It's a simple thing.
I know. Yeah. Little simple, fun things.
Everybody grab a dilly bar and enjoy football in Minnesota this morning.
Be good. Take care, Gary. Thanks, man.
Dude, 125 sharp. Yards.
I know.
That's like minimum expectation of what you get out of your starting tailback alone.
That's what your that's what your fullback runs for against Tennessee in a Fiesta Bowl. All
right? Come on.
Sauter Heyman, you want to talk expectations? Rick's got them for you, and he wants you to be comfortable. 0% interest financing at Sauter Heyman through 2020. Check out their extensive collection of both Earthmind and pure-grown diamonds. 1 carat diamonds available for $99 down and just $99 a month. Visit SauterHeyman.com or go see Rick today, 12th and O downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion, Lincoln or out west in Grand Island. Take advantage of that 0% interest financing through 2020. Might take care of you this upcoming holiday season. A quick timeout. We'll wind down to Saturday next.
Now back with Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery, with Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranek.
A quick goodbye as we're getting ready for Minnesota kickoff at 11. Kranek, what do you think happens?
Nebraska plays a football game, and Minnesota wins the football game.
Okay, you're leaning Gophers, huh? Did the 125 yards on the ground scare you away from a Nebraska win?
Well, yeah. Well, and this is going to be the coldest game that Tanner Lee has ever played in, I'm sure. Has to be, right? New Orleans native, played down south forever. It's going to be the coldest game he's ever played in. So we'll see. This is games like today are exactly why we have been saying forever, you need to have a run game.
Over under on number of screenplays today.
Set it at one, and I'll take the under, please.
That's your wish. They're going to at least throw three screens today. I go over that one number you set.
You are. Okay.
Yeah, you'll see some bubbles, and it is like catnip. You can't resist throwing a screen.
Spielman should play big.
Here's the thing. You either get – there's three choices, right? Average game, incredible game, poor game. And a lot of times when dudes go home, they press too much. Now, I don't think he'll try and do anything out of the ordinary. I think he'll come in with a good mindset, but Minnesota's going to be key on him. So the third and eight inside slant to him will be paid attention to. Someone else got to step up and make some plays in the air. But I think Nebraska runs for 100 and a half today. Maybe I'm too optimistic, but I think Ziggy has a good one. I think Bradley back is good. Mark, have a good weekend, bud. Thank you.
Sir, you too. Go
All
be
right.
Red.
Colton Stone, Chris Schmidt, back at you Monday on Hail Varsity. Thanks.